Welcome to the Making a Runner podcast. I'm your host, Nick, a running specialist, biokineticist, and coach.
And I'm your co-host, Davey, aka Davey on the Run, a running enthusiast, influencer, and marathoner, and I love everything about running.
As passionate runners, we look to use our knowledge and draw on past experiences to provide you with cutting-edge science and insightful information.
We are going to be unpacking the fascinating topic of running with all-stars, subject matter experts, and everyday enthusiasts to not only help you improve your running, but also ensure that you experience maximum joy with every step that lies ahead in your journey, wherever that may take you.
This is how runners are made.
It's how runners are made, baby.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I didn't feel that I had much worth attached to my life, and I didn't like being in my own skin. I got to high school, and that's when my drinking had progressed, and I stopped running. I stopped doing any exercise because, I mean, that wasn't giving me – it was too much work to feel good.
Yeah.
Whereas the drugs or the alcohol was like so
easy, quick.
Yeah. And this was in 2018, so I was like, well – just as my dream predicted.
Yeah.
So I'm going to die.
I know some elite men runners that are shivering in their, in their trail shoes. They petrify. The name Kepler. Kepler. Everyone's looking over their shoulders at the run.
She's coming.
I mean,
how do you manage that load and how does your body respond to it?
You were running like 2 days after the Grand Traverse.
Welcome, Davey.
Hello, Nicola.
How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing good, eh? I have a race tomorrow.
You sound like you always have races. What's going on?
I don't always have races. Tomorrow, Durban City Marathon. Feeling good, actually. But it's raining. Yeah.
Not good. Nice and cool.
It'll be nice and cool.
Perfect running conditions, they say. Yeah. What's the temperature? 15 degrees?
I hope so.
Cool.
That'll be great.
Not too much. Like
I'll even put my arm warmers on. Gonna be lovely.
Yes, you're gonna look like an elite man.
Absolutely elite athlete. But talking about elite athletes, we have the one and only Joe Kepler joining us today. Do you wanna tell us a bit about Joe?
Yeah, I mean, Joe's just got an incredible story. She's a super inspiring woman. Mm. She's an aspiring elite level trail runner. She's done and competed and placed in a few ultra level events. She's a mother. She is a wife. She's come from an extremely difficult background of addiction, and she really managed to channel that energy from negative to positive and turn her life upside down from ruin to running.
Quite honestly, one of the most amazing stories that I've ever heard. She's also offering a great service to the community in and amongst AA, also for the Lodestar Foundation. So her story is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think she's going to be chatting to us a lot about training and what it takes to become an elite trail runner, essentially. But also she's going to give us a little insight about where she's come from, how she's managed to turn her life around, and how difficult it is to actually go through that whole process and come out at the end of it with a positive story.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to her story of how she's managed to make herself a runner.
Joe Kepler, thank you for being in the studio with us today. Really excited to get chatting with you and for taking the time out of your schedule, which seems to be a very busy running schedule as me and Davey see.
Thank you, Joe. You've traveled all the way from?
Pietermaritzburg.
PMB for a Durban holiday. Yeah. Sunny Durbs. And it is raining outside.
Perfect race conditions for Davey tomorrow.
I'm frothing. As long as it doesn't start bucketing, we'll have to check the forecast after this.
Joe, let's start off with just a little bit of intro on you, and we'll get deeper into your story. But obviously, trail running is where your main domain of running is. How did you get into trail running, and how long have you been a trail runner for?
So not going too deep into the background of how it started, but basically what happened, I left treatment in April 2019. While I was there, there was this little like 3K loop around the center that we were allowed to run around, and it was all trail. And so when I got home, I thought I would love to keep up this running thing. I really enjoy it. It's good for me. So I thought let me carry on. And we live on a farm. So our dirt road up the farm is called the D494, and it's probably one of the steepest hills in Hilton, and it's a dirt road. So I started running up and down that road.
Okay.
And so it just kind of naturally progressed into trail.
Yeah, so that's how you got into it. I think the backstory is super important. So do you want to give us a little bit of insight into that? I mean, I was looking at a post earlier this morning, and it was literally called Back from the Dead. And I think that's one of the most amazing parts of your story, is how you've overcome addiction and ended up where you are. So just give us a bit of insight into that.
Sure. I mean, it's quite, I think I always had issues. I believe that I was born a bit different. I was always extremely sensitive. I was very, quite an emotional child. Very aware of what was going on around me. And from a young age, I kind of took a sip of a drink and I was like, oh my gosh, I've arrived, you know? And it wasn't normal, but I didn't realize that because, you know, for me, it was just such a great feeling. And it's funny because if you speak to any other addicts or alcoholics, they'll give you the same explanation of like that first time they picked up or the first time they had a drink. It was this feeling of like I've arrived. And, yeah, I think from that, you know, it kind of just progressed as I grew up and went into high school. I started drinking more, started going to house parties. And when, you know, the other girls were drinking like hooches or whatever they were called, I was there.
Smirnoff spin.
Yes. Yeah. I was drinking vodka and because I just wanted to get there faster. You know, it wasn't about enjoying it. It was like just trying to be unobtainable.
And at what age did you realize that you had a problem?
I think I knew from the age of 15, 16 already that what I was doing was not normal because the other kids my age were not behaving the way I was.
Yeah.
But then I was rationalizing it and saying, oh, I'm more mature or, you know, I'm just a badass.
And do you have any hereditary family stuff from before, or did you think it? Because obviously, I mean, alcoholism can be quite hereditary, you know, passed on through genetics, but is yours a new thing in the family?
So, I mean, I think my dad and I are very similar, and my dad's a bit of an all or nothing person. So I think we have very similar traits, but his never really became an issue. You know, he grew up in Greece and on a background that was very different to mine. You know, they were quite poor. Farming, then he was in the army, so he wasn't exposed to what I was exposed to as a teenager.
Yeah.
So I think that's the factor and that I think differentiates us. Yeah.
You know, in that sort of, you know, when your dad was going through it, I mean, in the army it was all normal. You know, heavy drinking was normal. Yeah. So I think only now, you know, as we get more into
become more conscious about it as a society.
As a society, yeah, correct. Okay, so 15 years old, you realized that something was not right, and how long did that progress for?
Sure. So, I mean, by the time I was 15, I'd already started experimenting with hard drugs, you know, that was like ecstasy, cocaine, and so the progression was very fast. And then when I got to 16, I developed bulimia. So also I changed schools.
And bulimia is, just for anyone that doesn't know what that is?
So it's an eating disorder where you eat and you actually throw up because of the fear of putting on weight.
Sure.
I changed schools from Howick High School to St. Anne's because I was having issues. And, you know, my poor parents, like, they just thought it wasn't me. It was something else that was affecting me. And I just think it was hard for them to accept that I was the problem. And I love blaming everything else. It's like, no, it's not my fault, you know.
I think that's quite a common alcoholic tendency is to find a scapegoat, correct?
100%. That is our modus operandi. It's like, it's not me, it's someone else. And it's funny, there's a page in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the book like I read regularly, and it's called Acceptance is the Answer. And it says, when I accept that I am the problem, not people, places, or things around me, then I can be okay.
Yeah. So you had quite a lack of self-esteem growing up. Obviously, I mean, if you know, bulimia, you're worried about putting on weight, alcohol, drugs. So you were searching for an escape.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was just, I didn't feel that I had much worth attached to my life. And I didn't like being in my own skin. So it was like always searching for something outside of myself to make me feel good.
Yeah.
And the quickest, what gave me that, you know, the quickest result was alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
So in junior school, I was very good at sport.
Okay.
I was captain of like hockey, swimming, I was running, everything. I got to high school and that's when my drinking had progressed. And I stopped running. I stopped doing any exercise because, I mean, that wasn't giving me, it was too much work to feel good.
Yeah.
Whereas the drugs or the alcohol was like so
easy,
quick.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually do any sports throughout high school. I became pretty useless.
And you must have felt like you lost your self-identity, you know, going through that period. Because obviously you were a sporty person, you loved activity, and then as you progressed into the heart of your addiction, obviously, I mean, did you seem to lose yourself?
Well, I don't think I ever knew myself.
Yeah.
Since, like, I honestly don't think I'd ever really known myself. I didn't know what made me happy.
Yeah, who was Joe?
No. So, like, I was just filling into all these little gaps that I found where I was like, oh, maybe that's my group. Maybe that's my tribe. Maybe that will make me happy. And, you know, that constant search. Like I said, anything outside myself to make me feel good.
Yeah, okay. So you've been running for, I believe it's 3 years, possibly 4 years now.
So I went into treatment in February 2019.
What was the culmination of that? I mean, we talked up until 16, 17, growing up. I mean, now you're how old? 33?
33.
You can't ask that question. It's rude.
It's not rude. I think our listeners would like to know. Because, I mean, there's also all elements of that. Yeah, 33 years young. There's still so much left to achieve as an athlete, you know.
But, I mean, what was sort of the tipping point that you got to?
So it's kind of a crazy story, but it's my truth. So I had this dream when I was younger. And I was about 5 years old and had this dream that my dad and my cousin were carrying a coffin and they put it in the ground. And I was kind of looking from above and it had Ioana Eleftherio, which is my real name, 1988 to 2018. So I had this dream and I had it every year. Just once a year, I'd have this dream. So I was like, I'm going to die when I'm 30. And I just believed that was my truth. And I had kind of come to terms with it. So from 16, 17, 18, then went to Greece on a gap year. I told my parents that, oh, I'm going to go study and this and that, manipulated everyone as I always did. Went to Greece. It was, really, I lost a lot of weight. I got burnt by fire, actually. Where the bangle is, but I had third degree burns up on my arm.
Okay.
Just from trying to cook something and it ignited and I tried to carry it out. Ended up in hospital. My mom had to come see me. I was severely underweight, and she was like, this girl's coming home.
Mm.
Went home.
So your mom came to Greece?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. And then I went home, and then I started studying a BCom finance, and I actually was doing really well. I mean, I got 10 distinctions in my first year.
Wow.
And then
where did you study?
Through UNISA.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was at Varsity College, and then I fell pregnant, and then for 9 months, obviously I was pregnant, and then I was breastfeeding for 6 months. I never touched alcohol or drugs. I stopped smoking, and I was like, you know, this is my solution, my child. This is going to save me.
Yeah.
I stopped breastfeeding, and a week later, I went out to a club for a friend's birthday, and I relapsed.
Wow.
And I was using again. And then what happens with addicts or alcoholics, if you stop using and you don't have a solution, when I say solution, like a 12-step program, AA, NA meetings, sponsors, when you pick up again, it's just where you stopped, it's like where you pick up, it's where you left it. It doesn't gradually increase.
Mm.
So it's like when I picked up again, it just was like, boom, you know, it's really bad. And then Leo was a baby, you know, he was a little boy, and there I was using again. And so I said to my folks, I need help. And I went to my first treatment center, and I was only 22.
So the success rate for a rehab is less than 20%. So
3%.
3%
is the success rate.
So how many times were you in and out of rehab?
So that was the first time. And then the problem is with the two rehabs that I went to, they just gave me medication.
Mm.
So it was like, here's a pill to make you happy. Here's a pill to make you sleep.
That instant gratification again.
That's it. So it was like no solution. It was just like, yeah, let's medicate them. But there was no solution. So obviously I left there and I relapsed again. Then I had these like, you know, months or years of being clean and sober, but no real solution.
Months and years.
well, okay, not a year, but I stopped drinking for probably about 10 months. Mm. But wow. Then I was on meds, you know, so there was no...
That must be heartbreaking for you as well, though, because, I mean, everybody's involved, you know, you're trying your best into rehab. So you're like kind of at the final solution, but nothing's working. So was it, I mean, it must have been a very scary journey.
Yeah, I mean, that then really my self-worth deteriorated because I was like, geez, I can't even stay clean and sober for my child. Like, yeah. What kind of person am I?
Yeah.
You know, I started hating myself. I really did. Yeah. And and so I'd have these kind of moments of kind of having some sort of clarity and then relapse again. And I mean, this went on until the age of 29. And then eventually at 29, it was really bad. I mean, I was having seizures. I had a car accident because I was driving and I had a seizure, which, yeah, that was just, it was
so
really
was that your rock bottom?
Yeah. So okay. That was the start of my rock bottom. And then I had another seizure and I had sores all over my legs because my body is shutting down. I had cellulitis. My hair was falling out. I mean, it was just, but and this was in 2018. So I was like, well, just as my dream predicted.
Yeah,
so I'm going to die. So it's like, just, you know, I'm done. Like, I'm ready. I said to my husband, like, you know what? You need to find a new wife.
When did you get married?
In 2014.
Okay.
With
Dave. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, when we got married, that was when I thought I'd put my life together. I was like, I've got the husband, you know, he adopted Leo.
And if I might ask, was Dave also an alcoholic or?
So when we met, we were kind of okay, both of us. Like, we were doing both well in our, like, businesses. We were fairly healthy. And that's what I'm saying. This disease is so tricky. Mm-hmm. It's so sly. Because you think you're okay.
Cunning,
baffling, that's what it is. And then it grips you. So we were okay, but then we weren't okay. And by the time we weren't okay, we didn't even realize we'd got to that point yet.
Scary, eh?
Yeah. So it was quite a journey. And by the time, I was 29, you know, that was me done. I'd had moments of wanting to commit suicide. I'd tried and failed. And then that was 2018. We were meant to go to a friend's wedding, and he said, you know, I'm sorry, but I don't want you guys there. You guys aren't in a good way. It's actually Matt Dove.
Okay. Oh,
wow. Yeah, he's a really, really good guy, and he's been a good friend of Dave's for a long time. And then he introduced us to his boss, who's in recovery, and then that's where I've kind of started finding a solution, and he introduced me to my sponsor, and I found out about Cedars treatment facility. And I tried to stop, but it was quite hard. And then, you know, eventually she said, well, Joe, I think you need to go into treatment. So on the 1st of Feb, I went into treatment. I literally told Dave like 2 days before.
1st of Feb 2019.
Yeah. And then...
So you had already outlived your expectancy. So now you're like, okay,
well,
I'm not dead.
I wasn't living, though. Yeah, I mean, I was walking around like a dead soul. Yeah. And I was like, this is my last shot. But my 30th birthday was horrific. Like, just the whole day, the whole night. Like, a lot of stuff happened over that 2 days that was like, I should have died. And yeah, so then I went in on the 1st of Feb. I was quite a mess. I was on a lot of Ritalin, like a lot. So they couldn't kind of handle me. So they kept me on it for like about 10 days.
Kept you on the Ritalin?
Yeah, and they kind of weaned me off.
Okay.
They wanted to take me off straight away. So my clean date's actually the 13th.
Okay, 13th of Feb.
Yeah.
Wow. So you've been sober then now for 4 years?
3 years.
3 years.
It was my 3 years, this in Feb.
So and you started running whilst you were at that center. That's the center that you were heading to.
Well, the funny thing is, when I got there, all I wanted to do was run and exercise. And they were like, oh, red flag, she's eating disorder. Like, she's not allowed to exercise for the first 6 weeks.
So in rehab, and part of AA is finding that higher power.
That's it, yeah.
So would you say that your higher power has been running, in a sense?
So when I was in treatment, we had to find a higher power that was spiritual. It couldn't be anything physical.
Okay.
Because that's the problem. That's, again, coming back to that whole thing about finding a solution outside yourself. It can't be outside. It's within, and your soul is connected to a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
But what I love about the program of AA and NA and what Cedars does is, like, they don't say God. It's the God of your understanding. Yeah. So there's no God, there's no Jesus, there's no Buddha, there's no, you know, it's, there's no specific religion.
It's just a higher spiritual power.
It's a spiritual program. And I think a lot of people that go into rehabs and treatments have had really negative experiences with religion somewhere down the line. And they're like, do not talk to me about God. Mm. Like, I don't want to know about God.
Shut down straight away.
Yeah. So that process is quite amazing to watch and to be a part of. And you see people like just connect and the penny drops and they realize, you know, what a higher power is. And a higher power is actually just knowing that there's something greater than you.
Mm.
And if you allow that to unfold and manifest within yourself, you become a better person and you can help others.
Yeah.
And that's your journey. Your journey isn't about you and just feeling good and getting fucking high. Your journey is actually being of service to humanity. And that's where you start building up that, you know, your self-confidence and that self-worth again.
So obviously, I mean, running releases endorphins. Endorphins is a sense of, you know, call it runner's high. And a lot of alcoholics, drug addicts that are becoming sober obviously do get into some form of physical activity because of the endorphin release.
Mm.
You're an ultra trail runner and probably one of the best in South Africa. You recently did Tanker Crossing. You did the Grand Traverse, which is all unbelievable achievements. But are you chasing some sort of a high when you're going on these ultra runs? Because, I mean, you could go and become a very good 42K runner, 21K runner. But are you searching for that 200K, that push? You want that?
Yeah, I mean, I've had to think about that quite a lot because also what I've had to...
I mean, everyone has their vice.
Yeah.
You know, so if you are, it's not, obviously, I mean, it's a great thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not saying, are you trying to replace it? I'm just curious as to...
The funny thing is, I do have to think about that though, because I've got to think, if something happens to me and I can't run...
If you break your leg tomorrow...
Am I going to pick up? Like, I've always got to think of that.
Correct.
And I've got to say, no, I won't, because, like, that's... I can't fix off something...
Correct.
...that's not inside my soul. I do think, though, there is something that correlates between ultra running and addiction, and I can't deny that.
Mm.
And I think there's something to do with going into, you know, I think Courtney DeVault calls it the pain cave.
Yes.
But there's something there.
But is that not just absolutely unbelievable? Because, yeah, you found your spiritual higher power. But, I mean, sitting here, I would say that running's also saved Joe's life. You know, running has given you that purpose. How do you define yourself? Are you a runner?
So, I actually thought about this the other day because somebody asked me. And, you know, my initial reaction response wanted to say, I'm a ultra runner, I'm... in recovery, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, whatever. Actually, I'm a child of God,
okay,
whatever God you want to call that, and I'm fulfilling whatever role I'm supposed to.
Mm.
And I think that running has been my avenue to be able to share my story and share a message. Because there are a lot of people like me that are much more amazing than me that have gone through much worse. And so they have been in recovery for years. But I'm blessed to be good at running, and so I can share my story and have a broader audience.
So just define service then, because you're basically saying that service is essentially your higher power. It's providing a service to others around you. So how are you doing that? How have you found yourself doing that?
So I will always go to AA meetings, and I'll always go to NA meetings. I will never be a recovered alcoholic or addict. I will always be in recovery. So... When you go to an AA meeting, there will be someone that will walk in the door and they stop drinking for 2 days, and you just see them shaking and they're like, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? This is impossible. I would rather die than stop drinking. And then you just talk to them afterwards and you go, well, let me tell you a story. You know, and you just see their eyes and they're like, are you being serious? Like, were you that way? And I'm like, yes, I was. And like that for me is service. So I have women that I sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's incredible is those women get clean and sober, and then they sponsor someone. And then that woman gets sponsored. Also in AA and NA, it's women sponsor women and men sponsor men. It's very black and white, because you also get people that will try exploits. So it's very, that's quite a strict, you know, boundary that we have. So out of the 5 women that I sponsor, some of them have been clean for a few years, some are still quite new, But then when they get sponsors, you know, it's just, and it's all free, hey?
So you're constantly finding yourself to be a role model to these women, essentially. And through that, you're also utilizing that energy to fuel your journey, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, it's, and I don't always have the answers.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'm in a mess and I have to phone my sponsor and go like, oh my gosh. Like, so after DGT, for example, I phoned my sponsor in tears because I felt so sorry for myself because I was at work on Monday and I was really struggling. And she goes, Joe, do you choose to run? So I was like, yes. She's like, well, stop, you know, feeling so sorry for yourself. You chose to do this. Stop making it a big dramatic ordeal event that happened to you and get on and do your work. And I was just like.
And I think with DGT, I think it's something that we're going to get onto and talking about it. I just see it like in a lot of your posts, there's a lot of philosophy that goes into your thinking as well. And I think you summed your post about DGT up quite nicely. You said chasing angels or fleeing demons. And you would say you would go to the mountains for that.
Mm.
And how was that experience? I mean, you don't get more mountainous than the Drakensberg Grand Traverse.
The Grand Traverse. Do you want to give us an oversight of what the Grand Traverse is?
So it's traversing the Drakensberg Mountains. You start at Sentinel parking lot and you finish at Bushman's Neck. And you've got a summit, there's six peaks, so it's Mont All Sources, Clef Peak, Champagne, Mafadi, Giants, and then Sabana.
And that is in total 260?
So it's 210.
210.
But myself and Michael Baker, who I did it with, we did 226.
Okay.
Because we actually got caught in a hailstorm at the top of Mafadi, and we had to find a cave. Which was quite off course.
Yes, we saw those pictures. And you did that unsupported.
Unsupported, yeah.
89 hours.
Yes.
So did you break a record?
No. So Linda Doak, who's my coach, she's got the woman with the mixed record. It was her and Reno Creasel, and they did it in 63 hours.
Creasel? It's my fiancé's surname.
Marrying into that family.
I'm going to tell her there's running jeans.
Him and Ryan Sands are doing that.
Yeah.
The Lesotho.
Yeah.
Navigate Lesotho. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Grand Traverse. 89 hours. You must have had a lot of time to reflect on lots of things. So what goes through your mind when you're in that pain cave and when you're really hurting?
Well, the first day, I just chatted the whole time.
Yeah, like feeling chipper.
I think Michael was a bit like.
How many Ks did you do the first day?
60.
Shit.
Yeah. And it was amazing. It was like perfect. So it was like, oh, we started at 6. The weather was great.
Yeah, this is going to be lovely.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is amazing.
No wonder they call it the Grand Traverse. It's going to be grand.
That's exactly how it was. And so like we got to the cave, and even the cave was luxurious. And I was like, geez, Michael, this is going to be a walk in the park. Tomorrow we do 70. He's like, yo, Joe, let's just, you know, see how it goes. So he's done this before. He knows the
Baker's a big boy, hey? He's also, he must be over 6 foot.
Definitely.
Yeah, no.
Yes, okay, yeah.
So then the second day, the weather was so crap. It was so cold. We went up that Yodeler's Peak, and then we had to go on the ridge and basically like crawl because the wind was so hectic. And yeah, then we got to Mafadi, and this hailstorm just came out of nowhere. The wind, it was really scary. I don't scare easy. Like, I think I'm pretty tough. And I got scared.
You've seen some shit.
Yeah.
You were telling me something on the run this morning about what Bakes told you when he turned around.
So, you know, then we tagged Mafadi and then found this little rock to hide behind. And he's like, well, what are we going to do? He says, if we go right, we go back onto our route. But that's where the hail was coming from. And he said, if we go left, we can go to Injasuti Cave, but it's off our route. But, you know, at least it's out of this shitstorm.
Injasuti is where we stayed. We tried to go up Mafadi the other weekend and we failed miserably.
You know, it's just so unpredictable.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of ducking under this rock and I said, well, let's just try go right. Let's just try. How far is the hut? He's like, I'm not sure. Maybe 2 or 3 Ks. I don't know exactly. We got up and kind of looked right, and that's where the hail was coming from, and it just like burnt our faces, and then we kind of like ducked back down, and Michael said to me, he was like, Joe, if we go right, we might die.
Possibility.
And that's probably telling the exact truth right there. So yeah. You obviously didn't go right. You obviously went left. You went to the cave.
Well, we actually sat there for about like 2 minutes thinking maybe this hail will stop, you know, and kind of trying to make a decision. And then I felt quite sleepy and I said, yo, I think I'm going hypothermic.
Quite sleepy.
Yeah, I just was like falling asleep in the spot.
And day two.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, I was going hypothermic there because it was so cold. And so Mark said, no, I'm making a call and we're going to the cave. So then we went to the cave and that was like 5 p.m. and we'd only done 40 Ks.
Only.
So, but we tagged our 2 peaks because our mission was to tag 2 peaks a day. So at least we had done that, but we had to go much earlier than what we had planned. So then we got into the cave and I packed, my backpack was 9.5 kgs because I packed a really warm sleeping bag, changes of clothes because I know I get cold easy. Yeah. So, you know, we each like had our own setup and, you know, we managed to get quite warm quickly. And then we said, okay, let's sleep for like 4 hours. And then we took off again at 10 p.m. that night. And then we started and we were in Lesotho. And then on Friday morning at 2 a.m., all the river crossings were so hectic because of all the rain.
Yeah, Davey is a great river crosser, I must say.
Yeah, we back to our Injusuti story.
Like a baby giraffe crossing a river.
I ended up face first in the river crossings a few times. So
yeah, they were really difficult.
They were, especially. Yeah. I mean, the water up in the Drakensberg has been crazy recently. Like those rivers are just very strong.
Yeah. Imagine at 2 a.m. in the morning with a 9 kilo backpack that's carrying all of your stuff that you need to keep warm.
Like 100 k's in, we were like 15 k's in, and I was like, I can't.
When Davey fell, we were like 1.5 kilometers in when Davey fell.
No. Yeah. I was just worried about my phone getting wet. I was like, where's my phone?
Straight for the phone.
Yeah, So
you took a swim as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I fell in and then I kind of got washed down for
at
me.
At 2 a.m.? What?
2 a.m. Because we had started it. Remember, we got back to the cave at 4 p.m. that afternoon.
And then you slept for 4 hours, started again.
At 10 p.m. about.
So running in the night must be a hell of a thing, hey? I mean, how much can you see? I mean, how much slower do you go? I mean, I've never run at night. I don't know if you have.
Through the mountains.
Through the mountains. It must be quite treacherous.
Yeah, I mean, you don't move fast. Your light is only as far as your headlamp goes, and if there's mist, then it's only as far as your.
So there's no running.
No.
Walking.
It's like
hiking.
Fast tracking.
Power hiking.
Yeah.
I can do that.
Yeah. Wow. But then also the problem was the escarpment was all wet from all the rain, so we were literally going through marsh the whole time. So our feet were wet 90% of the time.
Sure.
So wet socks, wet shoes, like freezing cold.
Yeah.
When that hailstorm hit, that must have been -2. And then, so at 2 a.m., then when I fell in the water, and I kind of got washed down 4 meters.
A little bit,
And then I got my stick and managed to, like, lodge it into a rock so I could get out again.
Yeah.
And then, that was very scary.
But you love it.
Yeah, now I do, but at that time, I thought a helicopter's gonna have to airlift me out of here. Like,
when was the first point that you realized, okay, this is hectic? Or
it was that hailstorm.
Was it the hailstorm?
Yeah, that was scary. Like, okay. I actually prayed.
Yeah,
I actually prayed because I thought, let me please get through this.
Yeah.
And I promise you, like, I know I've stopped smoking, I've stopped drinking, I've stopped, using. I'll stop being selfish. You know, like I was trying to think, like all these deals, all these deals are made with God along the way. Yeah. You know, it's like, now what else can I put on the table?
I've got nothing left to bottle
it. So it's during those really tough moments that you really think about that higher power again and take it back to. And I mean, there must be plenty of moments like that in your races as well, where obviously training for 100 milers, I mean, that is, I would say, from what I've seen you do, that would be your expertise right now, is training and racing those ultra-distance races. I mean, you've got one coming up now with UTD, is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
And you've raced UTD before?
Last year.
And, I mean, how do you go about preparing for an event like that? I mean, how does your coach look at managing that load as well? Because, I mean, if you look into account this year, you did that Tankwa crossing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I just wanted to quickly jump in there with, is that I was telling Nick a while back that I don't know any other runner, ultra trail runner who, I mean, okay, you did Tanker Crossing, 260Ks, I'm pretty sure.
So 207.
Why do I always go to 260?
But it's in the middle of the road.
I'm thinking 160. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, Tanker Crossing 207, you came second overall?
Yeah.
Second overall. Yeah. First in your age group, obviously.
And not far behind the winner.
You're 13 minutes.
Yeah. And that is through the middle of the desert.
Yeah, that's
during
just
like
summer.
Summer. So, yeah. I mean, a lot of people would. Was there anything else before Tanqua?
No.
Okay, but it was Tanqua, and then
I had Ultra Cape Town 100K in November.
Okay.
Easy race.
But that's like a 21K for us.
No, that was horrific. That was.
Tanqua Crossing, then you did Three Cranes for a little bit of fun.
Yeah. That was and, like a training run.
Yeah, and then straight into Grand Traverse. But for a normal person, it would either be Tanqua or Grand Traverse for the entire year. Now you're going Tanqua, Grand Traverse, UTD, and then I'm sure you got stuff after.
DG, I'm doing the Grand Traverse race in November with Amri. So this was like a wreck.
But now
that goes back to that question. How do you manage that load and how does your body respond to it?
You were running like 2 days after the Grand Traverse.
Yeah.
I did a marathon and it took me 2 weeks to even start running again.
So, I mean, okay, Grand Traverse wasn't hard on the body in terms of what you would do in a marathon because you're not running at that pace.
No,
I saw Davey hike through the mountains.
I'm so sorry, but give yourself some credit because 89 hours of trauma on your body. It is trauma. No, it is.
It's traumatic.
It's bloody traumatic. And then 2 days later, you were running again. Do you get sore?
Yeah, so I mean, I had a bit of a pain behind my ankles. So I thought it was the skin that was sensitive. So I started putting methylated spirits behind my ankles to toughen up the skin. But actually, it's my Achilles that's a bit tender. So I realized.
Methylated spirits. Alcohol doesn't solve anything. Eh? Come on, Joe.
It's fine if you put it on your body. Just don't drink it.
Put some ice on it.
No, I do. I have to actually put ice now that we know the issue is. So that was a bit tender, but I kind of just ran through it because I was thinking of, you know, that guy Nim who did 14 Peaks
on Netflix.
I was like, geez, if that guy can do that.
Oh, I love that
within
movie.
7 months, like surely I can run 2 days after doing the Grand Traverse.
Did your coach recommend it?
What, the methylated spirit?
No, running 2 days after the Grand Traverse.
Yes, she did. She said she knows me, though. And she said, like, it's better that my body, like, keeps moving.
Unbelievable, though, hey? I saw that your average pace was, like, it was under 6 minutes a K.
Was it? It felt like it was a really slow slog, like.
Well, it is very impressive.
Well, your partner, he was...
Yeah,
he was,
Bakes. Bakes was...
he couldn't stand on his feet.
We actually invited Baker to come and join us for this podcast, and... And I don't think he can leave his home yet. He's still recovering.
But I want to just get back to like your training in general. I mean, obviously we've chatted and, you know, you're focusing a lot on the endurance element. You're doing a lot of the slower, longer, just time on your feet. But in terms of managing that training load, how...
We have a fan waving at us again.
Mark Charles.
Every single
Mark
time.
Give him a shout out.
At Marky Charles.
I mean, from my perspective as a bio, I look at you and I look at the amount of training that you do and I'm just like, it's unbelievable how your body is just capable of recovering and just going again. What is sort of like your recovery modalities? Because that's an important element. If you're going to be training as hard as you do, you obviously got to recover just as quickly in order to allow yourself to train that hard.
I want to say that I reckon if she can come through like the midst of like chronic addiction and all of that, she's like, I can recover damn quickly from a little run.
It's all in the mind.
Yeah. Okay, but seriously.
So I swear by yoga.
Okay.
I love yoga. So I do yoga at least once a week. And it's not this intense, hot yoga, bend backwards, break your neck in half. Like, it's a very restorative yoga. The yoga instructor that I go to in the Midlands, her name's Sarah, she's just an amazing person spiritually. So for example, I went to yoga on Thursday and I was feeling very nauseous, which is a stomach thing I had after DGT. Yes. And she stopped me and she got me just to like lava and boulders, and then like not literal boulders, like
hot stones.
And then like sit against the wall with like my head on, you know, and do. It's very she's very spiritual, and I kind of like that. So it's very restorative.
How do I book a session? Because I've got lots of issues, and does she come to Durban? Because if she'll fix you up after Grand Traverse and all of that, then I'm going to start going to her for a few sessions.
I think you need a lot of help, baby.
A lot of help, right?
What? But, I mean, yeah, it's still, it's mind-boggling. But I think what you're getting to with that restorative side of it, it's just keeping your body moving.
That's 100% it.
It's key. And I know a lot of people would prefer to, after doing the Grand Traverse, just keep their feet up for 2 weeks and do absolutely nothing. And I think there's different ways of recovering, and you've obviously found the way that works best for you. And it's sort of just an active recovery. And a lot of the time, that's what I would sort of advocate with my athletes and the people that I train. It's important to keep the body moving.
Yeah.
And whatever it is that works for you, so that is going for a slow run just to get the blood flowing through the muscles and prevent that stiffness from building up, or taking part in a couple of yoga sessions, or even just doing a little bit of mobility routines at home. Yeah. I think whatever.
And swimming.
Swimming is an excellent way to recover. Yeah. So you do swim,
yes,
hey?
Yeah.
But where do you swim? I mean, you stay on a farm.
Active. Okay. Yeah.
She stays on a farm that has giraffes and hippos.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I don't swim in the dam.
That's what I was asking.
No. That would be really hardcore. That would be like, wow.
Well, you are pretty hardcore, Joe. I must say. I mean, other hardcore
challenge
things.
Challenge accepted, I'm joking.
Another hardcore thing that I want to just mention, and this is a journey that myself and Davey were on with Joe. I mean, we took part in one day of it.
SA Summit.
Summit SA. I mean, for those guys not knowing what Summit SA was, I mean, I'll just...
Or is. I mean, you can go and do it if you want.
Yeah, you can. Yeah. And it has been done. It has been done since we did it.
Yeah.
Well, since Matt you Dubb. Did it. Yeah, Matt yeah, Dubb did yeah. it. Since you did it. But I mean, it's essentially going from the lowest point of our country, which at that stage was...
Suncoast Beach.
South Africa.
Toes in the ocean.
Yeah. And then the highest peak of our country being Mafadi Peak, which you touched, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And
that was the first time we met, Joe.
I think that was the first time you met. I think we met previously to that.
Yes, in Belito.
We'd done a few runs.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was an incredible journey. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
So Summit SA, I didn't do the full thing. I just joined. So I think the guy started on, what was it, Thursday?
It was the Thursday, and then the Friday they were in PMB, and then we met with them on the Saturday.
Yes, so
you met with them on the Saturday as well.
Saturday morning. Shame. I think it's when Matt had just
pulled out.
Yeah, and then it was Andrew and Jordan.
Yes.
And so I ran with them and you guys that whole Saturday, which was so, I've never laughed so much. That day was hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean, going
hoot.
Through those fences and a then hoot. Like tearing, like, the chainsaw.
Because it was at that point, there were three that started. Matt pulled out. Then it was just Andrew and Jordan. And basically they were like, if either of us get injured or can't run, we're going to can it.
Yeah.
And I was there to see it through. I was like, this is... That's true.
That's my husband. He's taking away. Photos.
Hey. So, and I mean, this the route was planned by Matt, but it was done through just normal Google Maps. So it's pretty much looking at Google Earth and looking at where the roads go to and trying to figure out a way. I mean, how far was the whole of Summit? I think
260.
No, I think it was it not 240? I think it was 240.
Either way, it's a crazy distance with the crazy elevation. But now the thing that was hilarious is now you're literally trespassing to get where you need to go, because now there's a fence.
And we had no permission from any farmers.
There's a fence. You got to get through that fence. Otherwise, you got to do like a 10K loop.
Yeah.
And you don't want to extend a 240, right? So you're just going through, not really caring. There was a few moments where you're crossing rivers, like you're hearing things.
Chainsaws.
No.
A little bit dodge. And then, like, you'll go down this road for 10Ks and then you'll get to a fence.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, shit. I don't get around.
And we went through the fence.
Just go through. There was a few moments like that on that day that we were with you. I mean, what an absolute jaw that day was.
That was such good fun.
But it's amazing how running brings people together. Yeah. And, you know, through these experiences, I mean, that day, there was so many people on the road. It was incredible. Like,
yeah,
the amount of cars that were following us at those seconding points.
Mm. You felt like a rock star.
Yeah. Like an absolute rockstar. But Davey was hurting on the way to
Giant's Castle
Hotel.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, he was looking like he was falling off the bus.
I think he was hungry. That's what I got from it. Like, he just needed real food.
No, I was hustle. But then I was ready to be done.
It was a long day.
A long day. Yeah. Well, we ran for like 8 hours. I ran for like 8 hours, okay, which is long for me, a roadie. Yeah. Because I try and run for as short of a time as possible. I don't try and extend it.
Yeah.
But that was
an epic
journey.
You know what was amazing about that? And actually, like you say about people. So on the Sunday, we did the Mafadi bits.
Yeah. Yes.
And Jordan, wow. Yeah. What an amazing person to watch.
Yeah.
The most humble man I have ever met. And you could see he was in so much pain.
So much
on
pain.
That Sunday. And you would say, how are you doing, George? Yeah, I'm fine, Ash. I'm fine. This is amazing, guys. Yeah. Thanks. Like, and I was just like, wow. No self-pity. No, like, I'm struggling, guys. No, just he was incredible to watch. And, like, you know, it's people like that I remember when I do an event.
Yeah.
Because I think, wow, imagine what he or she was going through. You know, I've got this. Like, it's going to be fun. No, so, sure. I had to mention that because I'll never forget it.
He's a champ, yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked about we talked about your service earlier. Mm. And the other thing that I want to chat about is the Southern Lodestar Foundation.
Yeah.
So that is that's your job?
So, no, I have been working as a procurement or supply manager for Mulhouse International for the last 2 years, which has been I love it, but it's been quite stressful. We supply premixes throughout Africa, travel to Mozambique, so maybe this is the right place to kind of, you know, what is it? Announce it. But
do some advertising. Go for it. Come on.
So I have been training and working full time and then obviously being a mum and running around. So I wake up at 3:30 in the morning.
Yes. Wow.
And I sometimes only get home at like 7. And I don't have much time for recovery. So I'm sleeping maybe 6 hours, you know, and it's been...
No, Joe, no.
It's been very hectic. I got back from the Grand Traverse and I was like, I want to try to become a professional runner. Mm. Like, and I don't want to get to 50 and look back and go, shit, I wish I had done that and missed the window of opportunity.
I mean, you're on the verge as it is. So
I actually got back and I spoke with the MD and I have resigned. So this is my last month. So I will be going into full-time training next month. But also what I'll be doing is work for the foundation. So I won't be working full time. It'll be like part time work. It won't be as demanding as deadlines, meetings.
You're going to be, yeah.
So I'm very excited to see what I'll be capable of with.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't go to a bio as much as I should. I don't go to a physio because it doesn't,
no,
I can't go before 8 PM, 8 AM and after 4 PM. So, I mean, I've been going maybe once a month.
Yeah, I mean, when we were speaking to Nahang, I mean, one of the biggest things for those elite athletes is having a stress-free environment.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you have a very stressful environment.
Yeah, no, it's been very, very stressful. And my dad was actually quite concerned about me when we went to Tankwa. And he also had a discussion with me and he said, you know, you're burning the candle from three ends, not two. And he said, I'm worried that, you know, you're going to do a race or something. You're not going to do well. And like, what are you going to do? His biggest fear is like me ever picking up again. Like, bless my parents. Like they have been there through it all. They've seen the worst of the worst and it's been amazing for them. And sorry, I get so emotional always.
No,
it's just been amazing for them to see me come out of it and what I've been able to achieve. And for me, that's the best gift I can give my parents.
Yeah.
Because of them just standing by me through all my shit.
Yeah.
And they love me, hey, unconditionally.
Yeah.
They've taught me what a good parent is.
Yeah.
They might have had their faults, but like that love was, something Yeah, so I'm very grateful that I can do this now and they can be part of my journey. And they love coming to all my running stuff. Like those pictures of Tampa.
I mean, they must be so proud of you. Because
they're
I mean,
oh.
It's exceptional. It's honestly an exceptional story, what you're telling us.
Your story, quite frankly, is, you know, it's one in a million, kind of. I mean, addiction and recovery is such a... I don't think a lot of people actually understand, you know, how difficult it is and how many people out there... are always, you know, they go through their whole lives without finding the solution.
Without finding the purpose.
Without finding that purpose. So, I mean, your story gives me goosebumps. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I have so much respect for you and what you're doing is just unbelievable. You know, the recovery side of things, what you're doing in running is also like, I'm trying to put it all together because, you talk about like not doing great in a run. Like I also, quite frankly, get concerned because like I'm a Kepler fan and like I'm like, sure, Tanqua, Grand Traverse, UTD. How's preparation for UTD going? I mean, are you feeling good?
So I'll be honest with you. I don't know if I will be in tip top shape for UTD, but I believe in showing up.
Yeah.
No matter what. Yeah. And whatever happens on the day, I've got to deal with it and be like, you know what? Whatever the universe needs me to do, it will unfold the way it has to. And I've just got to let go. If I get to a point and I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is not okay. Like I'm really not feeling it. I've never DNF'd before and I don't intend on ever doing it. But like I say, who knows what happens, but then I might go out and have the best day ever and like crush it.
Yeah.
I can't predict things. I'd literally take it a day at a time. And sometimes it's like an hour at a time.
And I think it's an important point that you bring up because a lot of athletes, a lot of us, especially like working in this environment, we tend to want everything planned to the T and have a plan. And, you know, as a coach, we always say, okay, this is the plan. This is how you got to follow it. But you also have to learn to listen to your body and take it day by day. As you say, it's a crucial element of how you progress as an athlete. Mm. And I think becoming in tune with your body and knowing what it is capable of doing and knowing when you can push a little bit more and when you have to respect it a little bit more in training or in a race.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing that you bring up there is that element of never giving up.
Yeah.
Because, and that's something that every runner goes through at any stage in their life, on any run, and especially on races. Perhaps the race is not going according to how you want it to go. It's always easy to just, oh, well, let me pull off here and that be done. But I don't know who said it, but I've heard that if you do that once, and if you've done that listening to this, I'm sorry, but.
But I would also just like to say that. If you're going to be an elite runner now, I think there is also the side of it in terms of knowing when to DNF. If you're going to put your career into jeopardy, I mean, Nick, you know, we're not elite athletes, so we will never DNF or hope to. But I think I know a lot
of. I don't know, Davey. You told me that if tomorrow doesn't go according to plan, you're going to pull off.
Never.
You said that last night at dinner.
But the point being is that I know a lot of elite athletes that DNF for the sake of their career. Mm. So that is also just something that maybe you're going to also have to come to terms with.
I mean, I spoke to my coach last week, Saturday, for about an hour, and I told her the news about my work. And, you know, I said, so Linda, we're going to have to up the, you know. And her first response to me was, Joe, you're really going to have to cherry pick races and you're going to, you know, have to do things that are going to grow you as an athlete. She said, I don't want you to burn out. Mm. So Linda is very good for my mental health. So she's not just my coach, but she's the one person that speaks to me and I'll listen. If somebody tells me something, I don't always listen. I'll be like, whatever.
Do you listen to her?
I listen to her.
But
do you follow
the process.
Yeah. Trust the process. Trust the process. Yeah. Do you feel like becoming a full-time runner is your purpose? And how is that going to impact the way that you can influence people or be of more service to people?
So, I mean, tying back to the Southern Lodestar Foundation, so although I'm not going to be working full-time for Morehouse, I will be doing more work hands-on for the foundation. So what that means is that my hours are very flexible. So I can work from home. I can go to the schools and be... So I went to a school last month and we did a nutritional talk on what they, you know, must eat and mustn't eat.
I remember you gave us a stat the other day in terms of how much it costs to feed a child.
Yes.
And I don't know.
Yeah, so that's our porridge, which is, it costs us R1.30 to feed a child. And though that 50 grams of the A plus porridge is got the, it's fortified with your vitamin A, your B's, zinc, iron. And so it's much more healthy than just maize meal.
Is it a non-profit, Lodestar?
Yes, yeah. It's
so for anybody video. Listening that maybe wants to get involved, I mean, how do they find them? How do they donate?
So we are, we've got a website, southernlodestar.co.
Lodestar.
On Instagram, also southernlodestar. And
can you go on there and donate?
Yes. Yeah, so on our page, there's a donation button at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I recently, when I did Tankwa, I did a campaign, and that was for raising awareness around child abuse. So obviously I've been to quite a lot of these schools and other NGOs and NPOs, and what I've realized is a lot of the kids are sexually abused and they don't know that it's wrong, especially in the rural communities. Jeez. They don't know that they can say to someone no. So I sourced a whole lot of books, which is also crazy. There's no books in South Africa on child abuse. I mean, on like children's illustrations that talk to kids about like what's appropriate and what's not. So I found some from overseas and I ordered them, and they actually arrived this last week. So I'm going to distribute those to some of our schools that we support. And then there's like Angel Care in Howick, who's got a like crisis center. And then what I would like to do is actually write my own book and then get that translated into Zulu and Xhosa, because there isn't anything like that. So that campaign I did was, it was part of the foundation. So the funds still went into the foundation, but then I asked people to use Joe as a reference, and those funds were allocated specifically for a certain thing. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm more involved with the foundation, I can do more of the stuff, which is like really my passion. Like I love it.
So you love charity work.
I love charity work. And yeah, I mean, maybe like, so in terms of the financial side of things, like that's going to take a bit of a strain, but you know, life's, I can't go to my grave with my money, so.
No, well, it's about balance.
It won't take a strain when you're winning races and you.
Well, that, I'm hoping that if I get better at running, then I'll be more noticed.
If I get better.
When? She said when?
Yeah, did I say when?
You said if.
Did you?
I don't know.
Let's say
when positive, man.
When I get better.
I mean, even if you remain the same right now, you are an exceptional runner. Yeah. Honestly, like the fact that you're placing at all these races.
Yeah, I know some elite men runners that are shivering in their in their trail shoes. They petrify. The name Kepler. Kepler. Everyone's looking over their shoulders at the run. She's coming.
And I mean, with that, I mean, what are your goals and aspiration that you want to achieve with going full time, as you've just mentioned to us? I mean, you've already achieved so much and you're running in such a short career, but what would be like a major goal for you to get to?
So I think obviously international races, that's my main goal. So, you know, things like UTMB, Western States, you know, there's
the big leagues.
Yeah. That's, I want to go there and I want to win.
Smash.
That
gives me goosebumps. Awesome. So,
that's,
I mean,
awesome. That's my goal. Yeah. That's it. And I want to represent South Africa, and I definitely think I am an ultra runner though. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be interesting to see how I do in the shorter things, but to be honest, like I like ultra running. I really do. Yeah.
So on that note, you got invited to do the Nedbank Runified.
Runified.
Oh. What was it? 50Ks?
It was the worst run of my life.
Okay, but to put it into perspective, you got invited,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
That means that they classified you as an elite female runner, right? You're an ultra distance runner. You're not going 50Ks, but like that was pretty cool. When you got invited to that, how did you feel?
So I'm not generally a road runner, but when I do, I run for the Orcas Academy, which is Prodigal Kamala's. Yeah.
Are you fast, Joe? I mean,
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, my best marathon time's 3:10.
She's fast,
but you haven't given it enough like time to actually.
No, I've never trained specifically for.
And you wouldn't even. And you would never consider it.
Well, after that runified run,
yeah,
I will. Like, I'm pretty put off road running for a really long time.
I think she said she loves the trails. I mean, yeah. why go against it when it's something that you're so passionate about as well, and it's brought you so much into your life?
You know, I'll be honest, and the reason I need to say this is because I think it affects a lot of women, but I'll be very honest with you, being at those road running races, it brings up a lot of my like eating disorder stuff, because I feel so like fat, and it sounds mad, but it's the truth, because a lot of those road runners are very, very slim. Mm.
They're in their 40 kgs, or
it feeds into my disease. And that actually for me was a big warning. And I was honest to my sponsor, like my AA sponsor, as well as my coach about it. I'm like, this is how I felt when I was there. I wanted to lose 5 kgs when I left.
Mm.
And they were like, red flag.
Yeah.
This is
I saw a post the other day that you did, and you were trying to lose weight in between your thighs because you were trying to avoid friction. Or...
Yeah. So I got chafe, which is normal. And then I was like, oh, it's because I've got big thighs. And that's it. It's like,
that's where the mind goes.
The disease of perception.
Mm.
It's the disease of perception, and that's like what's anything to do with addiction, whether it's alcoholism, and you know, an eating disorder is part of the same
classification.
Yeah, it's all the disease of perception, and so I just found shorts that don't give me chafe, and I just use chafe cream.
Well, that's a healthier solution,
like, or baby powder, as David would put it.
Baby, we're not going to tell the baby powder story, or do you want me to tell the baby powder story?
Well, you can, David. We can stay away from it for today.
So, do you want to give your sponsors a plug, a little shout out? Because I believe you're a Saucony athlete.
Yeah, so Saucony are amazing. They give me a lot of shoes. And
they actually
gave me a brand new pair of the Peregrine 12.
Oh, wow.
In yellow, which are beautiful.
A Peregrine.
Peregrine.
I love those shoes.
A Peregrine in yellow. A Peregrine in yellow. Who in the marketing department okayed that?
Peregrine.
A Peregrine in yellow.
I love the Peregrine, David.
A Peregrine in yellow. Or in green?
Mine are green. I got a green pair of green.
You don't have a...
I do.
Do you? Maybe. The Sauconys?
Yeah. That's my trail running.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Did you guys see the video of them after the DGT?
Mm-mm.
Oh, my word. Those poor shoes. They were like ripped. The bottom was fine. Like the sole and...
Yeah.
But the top was just a knife from all the rocks and just... Yeah.
Okay. So Saucony give you shoes, and First Ascent are your... apparel.
Yes, apparel and sleeping bags and gloves and beanies and
the extreme stuff.
Yeah, all the crazy stuff. Shame. Yeah. I work with a lady named Nicole, and she's great. She's just always sending me stuff. She's like, Joe,
give her a shout out.
Yeah, I really will. She is great, and she's like, this will keep you warm.
Wow.
You know, because I don't like the cold at all. So they've been really amazing. Yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing. I'm very grateful, but I also need to look now at going forward. And I think to get to these international races, you need a sponsor that's going to pay.
Yeah, unless you can afford to get to UTMB, which is going to cost the arm and a leg.
Well, that was my plan, to work really hard, train hard, and then pay. And I was like, but I can't.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do it all.
Can't do both.
No.
And I think the amount that you've achieved doing it part-time and still managing your normal family life, I mean, it's unbelievable. And if anything, today was just an exceptional conversation with you. I'm so grateful that we were able to have it. It was really just a show of real strength, both mental, emotional, intellectual, but without saying... physical. I mean, we know it takes a lot of physical strength.
That doesn't need to be said.
But I mean, those are all key elements that go into making runners.
Yeah.
And we're just very grateful that you were able to come here today on holiday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, your story gives me goosebumps. And we are watching with eager eyes because there's only but good things coming. If you want to give Joe a follow, it's Joe_Kepler on the Insta. You can follow her yoga, her running. You can see the giraffes. You can see her lovely patio.
and follow the rest of her journey, considering that she thought her life would be over at 30. I think it sounds like it's just started.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable, Joe. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys. It's always so nice to see you. I always have such a good laugh and connection.
Good chat,
it's been really awesome.
And maybe we'll join you on another crazy adventure.
I think we
soon.
Have to.
You can take us up Mafadi, please.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You're going to have to drag Davey up that.
Well, for my birthday weekend, I've settled that I'm going to Indusuti and we're going Mafadi 2.0.
When's your birthday?
28th of May.
Okay.
Anyone listening, you can send flowers.
This is the thing. We got up to the gorge just before getting to the top of the escarpment, and Davey,
No, no.
Davey has been crawling now. He's been on the floor
crawling,
a couple of
cramping,
times.
Crying. The three C's.
A couple of times on the floor, and he looks at me, and now Andrew Erasmus and there was another two guys with us, Ant and Will. They were a little bit further ahead, and they kept on leaving us behind.
The roadies.
But I was getting classified into the roadies section. But I wasn't struggling as much as Davey. I'm just going to go out there and say it. Davey, let me finish. And then Davey turns around to me, and he's like, I don't know if I can do this.
Such a lie.
He says that. And I turn around, Davey, we've got to make a call here. Because now if we go up the gorge, we get to the top of the escarpment, we're going to go all the way to Mafadi. You know, and that's another 4Ks once we're at the top. We've already done 15Ks. You do realize we've got to go 15Ks back.
Which he hadn't realized.
He thought he was just going to camp at the bottom of the gorge. I don't know what he was thinking.
You only think about the summit. Okay. You don't think about the return. Yeah.
So Davey made me turn around to the other guys and be like, guys, we're not going to carry on.
Do you want to hear the real story now? The real story is that Nick only wanted to do like 20Ks, right? So then I was the one that was egging him on. I'm like, come on, bro, don't be such a wimp.
I rolled my ankle.
And he rolled his ankle. And I was like, okay, like, let's just get to 15 and then we'll turn. 15 was the escarpment or the gorge
going up this.
And yes, I was hurting, okay? I'm not going to deny that. But Nick looked at me and said, we need to make a decision. And I said, it's up to you. And then he walked over and he was like, okay, I'm going to make the executive decision, saving Davey.
Like Michael did with me,
You have to make that executive decision.
You've got
to
stand up. One person that's going to save your life.
But I save your life, Davey.
And then this weight was lifted off my shoulders and we had the most lovely run down. Nick and I stopped at this little stream and we had cheese and sandwiches and we just talked so much shit that we wasted so much time that when we got to the bottom and every single river crossing we got to, we would like
swim,
we would like wallow, we were in no rush. And then we got to the one and
Andrew Erasmus comes down. He'd been to the top,
summited. He came and he caught us and we looked at each other. I was first of all just embarrassed. I refused to believe that he had been to the top of Mafadi and now he was back with us. Cause we must have had like over an hour gap more on him.
Well, they would have still gone up. I mean, we turned around. Yeah, no, it was an incredible thing, but We learned a lot that day. We roadies.
Yeah.
We must stick to road.
We'll race the trail guys on the road and they can have their mountains.
We'll get onto the trail. Joe will get us onto the trail.
Yeah. May. Sure. We on.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Once again, guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Making a Runner. If you enjoy this podcast, you can listen to it on Spotify, Apple Music, and Radio Life and Style.
And don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram at Making a Runner to follow the journey of our guests and our podcast and catch up on the latest news.
Bye for now.
Cheers, guys.